Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. We got great news this week here at the Soapbox. I have been granted my request to interview Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez, and so I will be going down to Venezuela at the end of this month to interview President Chavez. I will be visiting communities. We're going to not only have an interview for the Soapbox with President Chavez, but we will have a documentary about the Bolivar and Revolution down in Venezuela. And not only are we going to Venezuela to interview President Chavez, but we will be traveling to Uruguay with him to attend the inauguration of the leftist president, the new president of Uruguay, Jose Mujica. We're very excited about the grassroots revolution in South America to overthrow the U.S. corporations, the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, and, you know, the corporations that come in and take over their water systems, their agriculture. And so we just want to go and document that. And this February, besides going down to interview President Chavez, we'll be interviewing Glenn Greenwald and John Pilger. So we just have a very exciting lineup for the Soapbox, and it just keeps on getting better and better. And in that vein, today we will be interviewing Native American Russell Means, and he's an activist for his people. So stay tuned. We'll be right back with Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox and with Russell Means.
Cindy Sheehan's new ebook, Myth America 2, further examines two distinct classes of people that clearly show that we are not all in this together, as President Obama has declared. The first group, the robber class, are wealthy victimizers such as those corporations and politicians that profit off the hard labor of others through economic theft and violent exploitation. The second group, the robbed class, are the victims such as those who work multiple jobs just to make ends meet, those who tragically send their children off to die in robber class wars, those who lack proper health care, those who are denied decent education, and those who lose jobs and homes due to robber class graft. The robber class controls our government, and as Cindy says, we, the robbed class, can only be robbed if we allow it. With pinpoint accuracy, humor, and in layperson's terms, Cindy Sheehan shows us why we should no longer be codependent with the robber class. To obtain a copy of Myth America 2, please visit CindySheehansSoapbox.com.
Hi, my name is Pam. I live in the Tenderloin District of San Francisco, and I have been a supporter of Cindy's since she announced she was going to run for Congress against Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi. I worked tirelessly on her campaign because I believe in Cindy and I believe in the cause of peace and justice that she stands for. If you're listening to this show, then more than likely you support Cindy too. Please consider making a donation to keep Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox airing on the web. It is important for me to be able to continue to hear the truth. In a world where truth and courage are in such short supply, Cindy fills that void. Please go to www.CindySheehansSoapbox.com and click on the donate link. That's www.CindySheehansSoapbox.com.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. This is Cindy Sheehan. Today we are interviewing Russell Means. Russell is an activist for the rights of American Indians. Means has had notable careers in politics, acting, and music. Russell is an Oglala Sioux and was born on the notorious Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. Russell, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Well, thank you for the invitation and the opportunity.
Well, we're very honored to have you on, and I just want to let my listeners know that you came to Crawford, Texas in the summer of 2005. We were very honored to have you give some wisdom to the people who were gathered there.
Thank you.
I want to talk to you so much about your Republic of Lakota and everything that you're doing right now, but you're kind of famous for occupying so-called federal land like Alcatraz, Mount Rushmore, Wounded Knee, and I'm actually going to be doing an occupation of federal land starting in March we're going to set up a peace camp on the lawn of the Washington Monument. And Leonard Peltier's sister Betty will come, and we're going to chain ourselves to the White House demanding that Leonard be released. And we were wondering if you could come to Washington, D.C. and be in solidarity with us.
And what time is this?
We're going to set up camp on March 13th. And we're going to be for an indeterminate amount of time.
All right. I do not have my schedule. My wife keeps my schedule. She's my business manager.
Uh-huh.
And you have to go through her.
Okay. Well, we definitely will. We'll try and set up a time that's good for Betty and for you. And I'm going to be there anyway, so I think that would bring a lot of attention, needed attention, to Leonard's case, to our brother Leonard's case. I was watching some videos that you made on matriarchy, and I thought that was very interesting. And I have written a lot about something I call matriotism. And matriotism seems like a lot like a matriarchal society. Can you tell my listeners a little bit about your concept of matriarchy?
All right, matriarchy is not what the patriarch fears. Because he has built, he's only been in charge of the world for a little over 6,000 years, and he has built a pyramidal structure. All his religions, all his organizations, all his governments, etc., are built on a pyramid basis with a white male or a brown male or a yellow male or any kind of color male is up on top of the pyramid, and then everything flows down that he can garner down to the base, if it ever reaches there. That pyramidal structure is what's wrong with the world. It's called patriarchy. It's built totally on fear.
Right.
And what the male fears the most is the woman that stands beside him. Because he doesn't know woman. And he has no idea what women are about. He believes that they are an afterthought by the Creator, and that the Creator, she's a spare part. She's not even original. So because of those kinds of beliefs, he's been terrorizing women since. Because there isn't any room on the top. He's so fearful. That's why he built his moats, his castles, his prisons, his insane asylums, his fences. Everything is for protection. Now he's out of balance. He's completely out of balance. A matriarchal system, as the indigenous people of the world know, is a balanced society. Every sex celebrates their differences. Now, you've got to really think about that because it's very, very profound. They celebrate their differences. They do not try to have civil rights. Because what is a civil right? It's nothing more than begging that male in charge for some of his rights. And that male will never give it up. Witness Wall Street. So we have these types of structures that are very basic. But you see, matriarchy, which has come under attack again over 6,000 years ago, And the women have been terrorized since, until they have now been so convinced that they should be like males, they've become generals, they've become board chairmen of corporations that rape the ultimate Mother Earth, and now they're into all kinds of violent activities like athletics, which have no place for women. Unless they so choose. It's a balanced society. It's recognizing who you are and what you are. For instance, women live longer than men, period. Mm-hmm. Women can stand more pain than men. Witness childbirth. Women have more endurance than men. So it's natural to look for the male to look for balance. Now, for the easiest way to understand for a modern woman about matriarchy is if she can have the innate strength, she has to, first of all, free up her entire spirit so she can grasp her power. That power has been misnamed by the patriarch as the sixth sense, or what's the other one? At any rate, that sixth sense the woman has, she has to release it and then believe in it. She's the only one that has it. Males don't have it. That's her strength. Also to recognize the strength that she possesses with humanity, you know, the creation of life. She is creation, but one of the most awesome things about matriarchy is the human female. The human female is the only living thing, the only living object that is purified naturally by the universe every 29 days.
Well, that's one thing that I found very interesting in your talk was that cycle and how that cycle was celebrated up until, like you said, a few thousand years ago when the Holy Roman Catholic Church took over society and made women to either be witches or virgins, you know, and not celebrating what you are talking about. Making now today, in 2010, we're supposed to fear these cycles and medicate these cycles. And women have been co-opted by the fear that men have about this power.
Right, and that's how Halloween was born. They say that power, that they are witches. And that's why they leave the village after every 28 days to recognize their purification cycle. And that's what that was all about. The strength of men. The strength of men is that they are practical thinkers, much more linear than women. Women have a connection to all that they give birth to. So men, in part of their strengths, will not interfere with a mother and the mother's child and the child's relationship to the mother. That's too respectful for a male to interrupt that cycle. And so they have to devise ways in their societies of ways to avoid interrupting that bond mothers have with their children. At the same time, in respecting their own strengths, they make practical decisions. Always, always, in the final arbiter being the elderly woman. So it's a very respectful acknowledgement of your being, who you really are. And so what I tell modern women, if you want to start exercising your power, one of the simplest ways to do it is to treat your husband or any male as a 12-year-old. Because in this society and this age, men still pout, they still throw tantrums at every age, and they still need mothering. So that power that women have can be simply regained by taking another look at the male and start treating him like a 12-year-old. He'll love it.
Well, you know,
he'll love it.
Especially in the United States, you know, that has gone so far out of whack because, You know, when my son was killed by this empire, by the wars of aggression, and I started to fight against that, you know, many people kind of bonded with me because of the mother issue, but a lot of people, especially the super patriarchs like the Bush administration, I often say, didn't they have mothers? Don't they understand this? And in the animal kingdom, the male animals know you don't come between a mother and the mother's baby. And so it seems to be so unnatural that people, and where are the other mothers whose children have been killed? Why aren't they
exactly? Where's Barbara Bush?
Right. Why aren't they rising up against this injustice?
It's you know, there is a saying among my people that old men and mothers know the futility of war.
Right.
And so that kind of wisdom can only, there. You know, as far as I'm concerned, there isn't a responsible mother in the world that wants to see her son go off to war. That
but,
is
but
such
there
an...
there is, and that's how our society's gotten so far out of whack. That mothers whose children have been killed have attacked me. You know, why do you buy into this? You know, and I tragically, our family tragically had to learn the hard way that why do you allow this patriarchal society to kill your child, but not only that, to kill other mothers' children?
Exactly. It's known as terrorism. Think back on how the female has been so terrorized to subjugate herself to the male. For instance, the sacred cycle of purification is considered dirty by the patriarch.
Uh-huh.
And the women are ashamed of it. They take medicines to stop it. They take medicines to interrupt it. It's because they're out to please the master, which the patriarch is. He's the biggest finger pointer in the world because he thinks everyone is like him. Essentially evil, essentially brutal, and exceptionally fearful. So his whole entire structures are built on fear. Fear of God, fear of the president, fear of another country, anybody that's different.
Right.
So a woman is certainly different than a male. Now, you can't imagine an Olympics for just women and what they represent. You can't imagine that. But you can imagine a male Olympics. Mm-hmm. So it's asinine, you know, you have to feel pity for those mothers who, because you know they're not responsible mothers, who will allow their sons and be proud of their sons that go off to war. I just did a play in Los Angeles the last 3 months. Just 2 weeks ago, I got off, ended the play. But that play was all about anti-war and about the ridiculousness and absurdity of war.
Right.
And the playwright used Indian people as the metaphor for what's happening in the Middle East.
Right.
It was a fantastically genius type play, and it's very funny. People can laugh at themselves, and it was also tragic.
Well, we have had, of course, our national shame has been, you know, the way we've treated our indigenous people for centuries. And it really must seem highly ironic to you that many people think that these things were invented by the Bush administration. But that's what the point of, I think, what you're saying is that we have treated our indigenous people, you know, to the point of almost complete extermination, complete genocide. And so how easy is it then, and these are people who are our neighbors and who live on the same land that we live on. So how easy is it for us to kill Japanese, to kill Vietnamese, to kill Iraqis and Afghans and Pakistanis without so much as heart or so much as a thought?
And now Yemenis.
Right, oh yes.
The Yemen people from Yemen.
The Gaza, our support of Israel's, blockade of Gaza seems to be modeled on shoving our indigenous people on reservations and, not literally walling them off, but you might as well wall them off with the poverty and with the oppressiveness.
And the no protection for any rights.
Right.
Because the Constitution does not apply to American Indians on the reservation. If we leave the reservation, move off of it, then we get constitutional rights. But what is happening in the context of the world is we have the continuation of Bush's third term.
Right.
It's a good cop, bad cop scenario.
Mm-hmm.
We got the bad cop first, now we get the good cop. Here's the Nobel Peace Prize winner who is now, for the first time in decades, he's ordered the remaking more nuclear weapons, violating another peace treaty, no different than the treaties that Bush violated. And here's the Nobel Peace Prize winner who ordered attacks on Yemen, and now is utilizing Americans as military advisors in Yemen. The exact thing they did in Vietnam.
Right.
So this new president isn't any change. He just talks a little prettier than Bush did.
Well, your statement about that was brilliant. And tell my listeners where they can find your... you have, many brilliant YouTubes about... Your statement about the Nobel Peace Prize was brilliant, and this matriarchy series was really good. But you have so many others. Where can my listeners find your statement, your video statement?
Okay, well... Most of them are on YouTube, Russell Means,
mm-hmm.
but all of them are on the Republic of Lakota.com mm-hmm. website. RepublicofLakota.com.
I'm on that website right now. That's the Republic of Lakota, LAKOTAH.com. And you have declared. Actually, you, in 2007,
withdrew from our treaties with the United States of America.
Yeah, talk about breaking treaties. The United States of America has never kept a treaty with our First Nation people, have we?
No, not at all, but we were about ready to present after months of research. We're about ready to present an international document, not only to the United States, but to countries around the world, about the actual international and national laws that force recognition of our independence, so that any country can, with clear, good intentions, can recognize the Republic of Lakota. So we're coming to a very, very important step in the resurgence of our independence. And from after we present this international document, which is going to be very, very historic, we are then going to begin to propagandize our plan for the Republic of Lakota and how the only way you can ensure freedom is through unanimous consent. And the smaller the unit, the better for so if that smaller unit has total control, it's better for them because they can have unanimous. It's easier to have unanimous consent because you just cannot rule a people where there's a minority. It doesn't fit into human rights.
Right.
Everyone should enjoy everything they agree upon.
Well, tell us about, in 1987, you actually were running for the nomination for president with the Libertarian Party, and you actually got a really good percentage of the vote, but you lost that nomination to Congressman Ron Paul. And so you were seeking kind of an alternative within the system, but now it seems like you're, doesn't seem like it, but you're totally stepping outside of the system and creating your, what I feel we need to do is create our own healthy systems. What was the evolution into that respect for you?
Well, the evolution is continually trying to use any method necessary to force the United States of America to live up to its own laws. It
right.
became very apparent to me that it's not going to happen. So rather than, and I'm watching my people die and disappear right. as a distinct people. And, you know, this country doesn't want you to be distinct.
No.
They want you to be part of the sheep. So, then they have only one, I've realized through politics, there's only one, this is a one-party system, a very
right.
backwards kind of system where you have Demopublicans. And the only difference between a Demopublican is the fact they have different spending priorities,
mm-hmm.
but everything remains the same, the consolidation of power into Washington, D.C. Now you have a Supreme Court that has made it legal to bribe. That you can call it campaign financing, you can call it lobbying, you can call it whatever you wish, but it comes down to simple bribery. And now it is legal to bribe and accept bribes when you run a country. That's not freedom. That's not
no.
constitutional.
It's a corporatocracy, for sure. And so you want the right to practice your religion, to practice your language, to be different.
Yes, that, the language is the essence of indigenous people. Once mm-hmm. you lose your language, you lose your essence of being. And our language, which is much more elaborate than English. All of our Indian languages are more expressive. Linguists have already ascertained that. So to lose our language is to lose who we are. It's as simple as that. I cannot afford it. I don't want my children to afford to lose out, especially my grandchildren and great-grandchildren, all of which I now have, and I cherish them to the nth degree. Therefore, we can no longer allow the United States of America to oppress us and rid us of our essence.
Do you? Are there any other movements among other tribes, you know, on the continent or in Hawaii or in Alaska for this kind of?
Well, in northern Canada, there are some total immersion schools that have completely repudiated English as the driving language or as the dominant language. There are still schools in Guatemala and Chiapas and other places in southern and central of Mexico that are adopting these same things. It's the Maoris who started. Now the Hawaiians have been doing it for over 15 years in the different islands over there in that state, and they're doing total immersion education like we are. after what the Maoris produced. So it's now an indigenous worldwide movement to reject the teachings of the industrial society and to begin to rethink and reteach our indigenous way of life and how we look at it. So this worldwide indigenous movement actually began in New Zealand.
And I see I've been to Ireland several times, and they're trying to reclaim Gaelic as their...
Yeah, exactly. They're doing the same thing as well as the Welsh in Wales and the Basque in Spain.
Uh-huh.
And there's one small group in central Italy that's going back to their original language. The people who live in the top of the mountains in Switzerland, the Alps, you know, they still possess their language, and it's now one of the official four languages of Switzerland. So they have total control of their language. It's worldwide, and in South Africa it's happening, in other countries around the world. I know in the northern parts of India, where the Naja live, they are doing their own education, as well as the indigenous people of Indonesia. So it really is a worldwide movement now.
Well, that's wonderful. And I was, when the tragedy happened in Haiti, and, you know, the world is rushing aid to Haiti, and this is what really, I mean, I think that that's good. I think that they do need aid, but what really gets me is that Americans will, you know, spend $10 or $20 when there's a hurricane, you know, or a tsunami or an earthquake in Haiti, ignoring the fact that there's people in our own country that are suffering, or ignoring the fact that our country causes a lot of suffering around the world. And I was reading on your site, the Republic of Lakota, that the average life expectancy for a male on the Pine Ridge Reservation is 44 years, and the incidence of stillbirth is 300% higher than in the rest of the country. And what can my listeners do to help?
Well, right now, of course, the another severe winter, two in a row. I've heard the Republic of Lakota up on the Cheyenne River Sioux Indian Reservation, they had over 8,000 telephone poles that snapped, and they were without electricity during one of the more severe blizzards of the winter just last week. And 2 weeks ago, they were out of, some of them are still without electricity. So they've been out of, my daughter, for instance, lives up there, and they were without electricity for 6 days. And without water for over a week, about 8 or 9 days, and it was it's very severe up there, and it is it's as severe as what Haiti has gone through.
97% of Lakota people live below the poverty line, and to me, in a so-called wealthy nation, that's an abomination.
Yes, it is. Well, we're a people out of sight, out of mind.
Right.
And therefore, you know, there is, for instance, there isn't anything in the history books of our existence in the 20th century.
When you go to your website and you click on humanitarian relief, if my listeners donate, what will they be donating for?
Well, they would be donating to our school.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we wanted. We just got our first large grant, actually our second large grant, and if you count my money, our third large grant. But I, the Annenberg Foundation is going to be helping us out the next 2 years. So yeah, the Treaty School, it's thetreatyschool.net, I believe, or .com, treatyschool.com. And that will give everyone the information.
What? How do you say we are all related in Lakota? Mataku Oyasi.
Oh yes, yeah.
Well, we are all related, and you know that's what a
Mataku Oyasi.
Yeah, that's what a matriot would.
Oyasi, yeah.
A matriot knows that we're all related, and we need to help our brothers and sisters, and so. We're out of time, Russell. I just want to thank you for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. And we'll link your website to my website so my listeners can get more information.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Russell. That was Russell Means. Great interview. Stay tuned after this short break. We'll be back with the National Director of World Can't Wait, Deborah Sweet. And we're going to be talking about the recent verdict in the trial of Dr. Afia Siddiqui, so stay tuned.
Hi, my name is Pam. I live in the Tenderloin District of San Francisco, and I have been a supporter of Cindy's since she announced she was going to run for Congress against Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi. I worked tirelessly on her campaign because I believe in Cindy and I believe in the cause of peace and justice that she stands for. If you're listening to this show, then more than likely you support Cindy too. Please consider making a donation to keep Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox airing on the web. It is important for me to be able to continue to hear the truth. In a world where truth and courage are in such short supply, Cindy fills that void. Please go to www.cindysheehansoapbox.com and click on the donate link. That's www.cindysheehansoapbox.com.
Cindy Sheehan's new ebook, Myth America 2, further examines two distinct classes of people that clearly show that we are not all in this together, as President Obama has declared. The first group, the robber class, are wealthy victimizers such as those corporations and politicians that profit off the hard labor of others through economic theft and violent exploitation. The second group, the robbed class, are the victims such as those who work multiple jobs just to make ends meet, those who tragically send their children off to die in robber class wars, those who lack proper health care, those who are denied decent education, and those who lose jobs and homes due to robber class graft. The robber class controls our government, and as Cindy says, we, the robbed class, can only be robbed if we allow it. With pinpoint accuracy, humor, and in layperson's terms, Cindy Sheehan shows us why we should no longer be codependent with the robber class. To obtain a copy of Myth America 2, please visit CindySheehansSoapbox.com.
Is the National Director of World Can't Wait, Deborah Sweet. Deborah, welcome to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
Good to be here, Cindy.
Again, you've been on the show before. We were talking about torture over a year ago, and Guantanamo's still open, isn't it?
It sure is. And the question under the Obama administration is Guantanamo becoming a state of indefinite detention being spread across the globe.
I was in New York a little over a week ago. You and I went to the first day of the trial of Dr. Afia Siddiqui, a Pakistani woman who was accused of trying to kill Americans in Afghanistan. And they brought her to New York for her trial. And I sat in on the opening remarks of the prosecution and the defense. And I knew immediately that she was being railroaded and that she was not going to get a fair trial and that she was actually going to be convicted. But can you first tell my listeners about the case, about what allegedly happened in Afghanistan? I think it was in July of 2008.
Right.
what happened in Afghanistan, and then the trial and the verdict.
Yeah, this is a very bizarre case, even in the confines of what's come to be known as the War on Terror, when we know a lot of strange things have happened. People have been grabbed by the CIA and the U.S. military all over the world and ended up in other places. Dr. Afia Siddiqui was educated in the U.S. in the 90s. She got an advanced degree from both Brandeis and MIT as a neuroscientist. Then she mainly went back to Pakistan to try to work, had a couple of children, including at least one that was born in the U.S. And sometime after 2001, from what I understand, because she was Pakistani, and she dressed in a traditional way, that is, wearing a veil, she and her husband, who's also Pakistani, came to the attention of the FBI or the CIA, and there's been a lot of insinuations that she had something to do with terrorism or Al-Qaeda. In fact, the New York Daily News has been referring to her as Lady Al-Qaeda.
Right.
At any rate, Dr. Siddiqui disappeared for as much as 5 years. Two of her children are gone. Nobody seems to know where they are. She was in Pakistan, and then 5 years later, we really don't know why, appeared in front of the governor's house in Ghazni, Afghanistan, in July 17th of 2008. She was, according to them, mumbling incoherently and had her son with her, who was 11 years old, an American citizen, and she was taken into custody at that time by the Afghanis. Of course, remember, Afghanistan is occupied by the U.S. in July of 2008, and she's brought to an Afghan police station where she's beaten overnight, interrogated and beaten several times.
Right.
The next morning, that's July 18th, a whole contingent of U.S. military, FBI, and other people with the United States show up at the police station. Their plan
what
is
I found
they take her into
interesting
custody.
About the contingent of Americans is that it included
yeah.
a female medic.
They seem to have been prepared for a number of scenarios, but they clearly
right.
wanted to take Dr. Siddiqui with them, and the Afghans didn't want that. She was their prisoner. But what ensued was very strange, and we heard testimony about this from both sides in the trial and from Dr. Siddiqui herself. The Americans came in, said they wanted to take the detainee. She was very, admittedly, said she was very scared about this, and she wanted to escape. She was being held on one side of a curtain in a tiny room, for some reason unsecured by the Afghanis, after having been beaten and
right.
chained to the bed the previous night. And then there's a huge divergence of what happened. 9 Americans testified that she picked up an M4 rifle that one of them had set down on the floor and began shooting at them. She testified that she looked, pulled the curtain aside and looked at the Americans. They freaked out, and all of a sudden she was shot in the abdomen twice. The only physical evidence that was given in the trial showed clearly that she was indeed shot in the abdomen and hospitalized for several weeks. But there was never any physical evidence that she picked up or fired a weapon, or even that the weapon had been fired, or any evidence of any bullets in the room. This is a 300-square-foot room, not a very large room for all those people. There was testimony for several weeks, and in fact, on Wednesday, the jury found her guilty on charges of attempted murder of Americans. Citizens, apparently a worse crime than attempted murder of anyone else, and
right.
therefore a federal crime.
Right.
And she's awaiting sentencing.
There's so many injustices, miscarriages of justices in this case, of justice in this case, that it just is incredible. You know, first of all, when I was in the trial, I found it very telling that the prosecutor in her opening remarks said, well, you know, we're going to show that you can't get fingerprints off of a weapon, off of a gun very easily, that that's only in TV. Well, you know, if she was supposed to have taken an assault rifle, that would be 10 places where there could be fingerprints. Every one of her fingers touches that assault rifle, but they couldn't get one fingerprint off of it. It's just amazing to me that, first of all, this case was even brought to trial. Obviously, to me, it was obvious that the U.S. contingent there was just trying to cover themselves for shooting an unarmed woman.
And then you also heard, I think, the day you were there, Dr. Siddiqui had several what the court called outbursts, where she said, look, I was held in a secret prison, I was tortured, and my children are dead, they were taken away. This was a woman deeply traumatized. I think anyone who saw her would agree with that. And
well, she was
both
traumatized,
the media and the court made fun of this.
During her trial, too, every time she left Brooklyn, where she was being detained, she had to be strip searched. But I've been strip searched before. It's deeply humiliating. But to somebody who comes from that culture and that religion, it's even more humiliation, and I think that's what it was intended for.
I think one of the biggest contradictions in this whole case, and again, there's a story and people can read about it. I've been writing about it on my blog, and others have too. She said in court several times she had been held in a secret prison and tortured. The American media and the court obviously thought that that was a fiction. Oh, we don't do that. You know, they almost laughed about it. But in fact, contiguous with the trial at the same time, we've had several major exposures of, in fact, that secret prisons that are being continued under the Obama administration, including...
Well, we are running out of time, Deborah. Can you tell my listeners where they can find your blog so they can read more about the case?
Sure. It's deborah.worldcantwait.net, and I have links to other stories as well there.
Okay, great. Thank you for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox again, Deborah, and filling us in about this case.
Cindy Sheehan's new ebook, Myth America 2, further examines two distinct classes of people that clearly show that we are not all in this together, as President Obama has declared. The first group, the robber class, are wealthy victimizers such as those corporations and politicians that profit off the hard labor of others through economic theft and violent exploitation. The second group, the robbed class, are the victims such as those who work multiple jobs just to make ends meet, those who tragically send their children off to die in robber class wars, those who lack proper health care, those who are denied decent education, and those who lose jobs and homes due to robber class graft. The robber class controls our government, and as Cindy says, we, the robbed class, can only be robbed if we allow it. With pinpoint accuracy, humor, and in layperson's terms, Cindy Sheehan shows us why we should no longer be codependent with the robber class. To obtain a copy of Myth America 2, please visit CindySheehansSoapbox.com.
Hi, my name is Pam. I live in the Tenderloin District of San Francisco, and I have been a supporter of Cindy's since she announced she was going to run for Congress against Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi. I worked tirelessly on her campaign because I believe in Cindy, and I believe in the cause of peace and justice that she stands for. If you are listening to this show, then more than likely you support Cindy too. Please consider making a donation to keep Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox airing on the web. It is important for me to be able to continue to hear the truth. In a world where truth and courage are in such short supply, Cindy fills that void. Please go to www.cindysheehansoapbox.com and click on the donate link. That's www.cindysheehansoapbox.com.
Well, that's it for Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Next week, we will be on the air with Glenn Greenwald, who is a lawyer and a journalist who writes a lot about civil rights issues and about the way our civil rights are being taken away here in America, so that should be a great show. We're also going to be talking about my action piece of the action, PEACE of the action, which will be coming up soon. So we hope that you can tune back in again next week. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Scott Cuddy, my webmaster, Rich Bowser, my assistant producer, Mikey, and you, as always, for listening.
I must make my witness. I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. Dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. Sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes. As if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest, I don't want you to riot, I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being, God damn it, my life has value.
They're yelling in Baton Rouge.